Hello and welcome to PCB Chat, where we talk with experts across the printed circuit design, manufacturing, and electronics supply chain fields. I'm Mike Buto, Editor-in-Chief of PCDNF and Circuits Assembly. My guest today is George Malad, National Accounts Manager at Uemura and Co-Chair of the IPC Plating Processes Subcommittee. Welcome to PCB Chat and Happy New Year, George.
Thank you, Mike. Happy New Year to you too.
George, your committee is about to publish the B revision to IPC 4552, which is the industry standard for ENIG plating. What are the key highlights to this revision?
The key highlights of revision B is that it is calling for mandatory corrosion evaluation. That's the key, because before revision B, we had revision A. And revision A mentioned methods of evaluating corrosion, just mentioned methods of evaluating corrosion. It did not require corrosion analysis as a requirement. Revision B is calling for the analysis to be a requirement. And then after you do the analysis, it goes into some detail of how to evaluate your observation. And after you evaluate your observation, it also defines how you come up with, quote-unquote, a product rating. And this product rating will create pass-fail criteria. And so that is where Revision B is different from Revision A.
George, when a task group sits down to write or update a specification, what role do existing technologies play in the decision-making?
The group has been working on surface finishes since 2002. And we've written specs for ENIG and for silver and for tin, you know, and then we come back and revise the specification continuously as changes occur in the industry. You know, it's not the same. In 2002, when ENIG was written, there was no lead-free anywhere on the horizon. So now with lead-free, et cetera, we had to come back and revise the ENIG specifications. And we constantly do that as the industry calls for it. And we've revised the silver specification, we've revised the tin specification, and this is the second or third iteration of the ENIG specification. And it is in response to industry evolution, you know, that the requirements are now different, so we need to talk to that.
When I was working at IPC and was working with some of the soldering committees, one of the committee chairmen used to post a slide before every meeting, and it would read, "In God we trust, all others must bring data."
Yes.
Is that still the prevailing sentiment?
It is the prevailing sentiment, and we, the way this committee works is we come up with, okay, we want to write a specification on such and such a topic. Okay, and then we say, okay, here is what we suggest the specification should look like. And then we go around the table for the people on the call. All our work is done, by the way, through conference calls once every couple of weeks. And then if everybody is in consensus and agreement, then it is the spec. So our view is a specification is a consensus document. Consensus document. And if everybody's in agreement, then we write what we all agreed upon, and that becomes a spec. And then usually there is no consensus. And then somebody or more than one person would say, no, I don't agree with this. I think we should check this out, and so on and so forth. Once this happens, then that triggers beta collection. So we go out and we start designing experiments to answer the point of dispute, you know, and then we do work, and the work is done within the committee. We design a test vehicle, and we send it out to different facilities to put the surface finish down, and then they come back, and then we send it out to other facilities to evaluate the solderability of the finish and the capability of the finish. Then we gather the data, and then we analyze the data, and then come back and say, okay, here is the data that we gathered. Now can we come to a consensus? And if we do, we write the specs. If we don't, then we figure out what is it else that we need to investigate. So that's how we're doing it. It's not, it is data-driven, but above data-driven is consensus. This committee is working with the basis at an IPC specification coming out of 414. The creating subcommittee is a consensus document.
So it's clearly an extensive process from the authorship standpoint. How is the new standard expected to benefit the OEM?
Yeah, that is the big question. And the new standard, of course, is an Enix standard. And Enix has been around now for forever, if I would dare say, because we wrote the first spec in 2002. So now it's almost 20 years later that Enix has been around. And it's gaining a tremendous amount of popularity in spite of, the naked corrosion issue hovering over it all the time. The interest in Enix is that it is a well-understood final finish. It has a very good shelf life. It is easy to inspect. It makes a nickel tin intermetallic during soldering. It strengthens the plated through-hole. It is aluminum wire bondable, and it's a good contacting surface. These are the attributes of Enix. So it is here. It's here to stay. I don't know what the future holds, but at the moment, it is an important repertoire of PCB manufacturing is an Enix finished board. How would this benefit the industry, the fact that we come up with this? It is, on the surface, it looks like the committee is saying you should look, you have to verify that your product is corrosion-free. Now, that's a huge, huge advantage to the OEM. Now, the OEM does not have to go ahead and try to inspect the product and verify that it is corrosion-free, and when it's not, when corrosion occurs, there'll be disputes and what have you. So the plan is once the board shops implement this and with OEM supervision, that there will be data to support the absence of corrosion in the finish. So that is where the OEM benefits the most. Now, the intent is different. The intent on the committee was, this corrosion thing has been around, and we need to bring it to a closure, if you will. So the intent is, once I highlight it this way and ask people to evaluate corrosion continuously, then there would be one or two outcomes, that a board shop is making Enix boards that do not have corrosion, so they should feel very good about the product, should become a sales pitch for them, et cetera, et cetera. Or they have corrosion. Now, if they have corrosion, they have to go back to their vendor and to their manufacturing site to say, what is going on? We need to fix this. This is the key. So the fix has two sides, if you will. There's one end that can be fixed at the board shop, and that is the board shop implementing better process controls. And the other side would be the supplier, like myself. The supplier has the responsibility of bringing in products that would not create corrosion, a more quote-unquote robust product. So the onus on the supplier is, give me a product with a bigger latitude, bigger operating window, so I can make corrosion-free product. And the onus on the manufacturer is, what do I need to do to ensure that I have no corrosion? There is no supplier, Mike, that has corrosion 100% of the time. It's never happened. So the corrosion comes and goes. And when you see it, then you have to go in and do failure analysis, et cetera, until you find the root cause. This involves some modification on the manufacturing side. And that is process control. And it also puts the onus on the supplier saying, your process goes out too often, and I'm not happy with that. So me, to stay in business as a supplier, competing with other suppliers, I'm now forced to produce products that would be more resistant to corrosion. So that is the intent, and this is what we see the OEM is going to be excited about.
So chemistry is a tenacious thing, right? The black pad problem showed up starting, maybe 20 years ago, and who knows what will be next down the road.
Yes, you're right. And the two terms nickel corrosion and black pad are synonymous. So the black pad was the initial terminology that was used when the problem was first encountered, because it does look darker. When you strip the gold and look at the nickel is darker gray than what we expect, which is a kind of a silvery gray. If there's no corrosion, when you strip the gold, the nickel is silvery gray. If there is a lot of corrosion, then it becomes darker gray to the point of getting black. So black pad and nickel corrosion are synonymous. It is, we're talking about the same thing, just better terminology, because nickel corrosion is better defined and better understood, while black pad seems to be floating out, you know, as a big umbrella, catch-all umbrella for any defect that's encountered with E-Nic. And it is a chemical problem. The black pad or nickel corrosion occurs during the step of immersion gold. So you come in, you clean the board, and you catalyze the surface, then you deposit the nickel deposit, and then come out of the nickel and you go into the immersion gold bath. The immersion gold bath is where corrosion of the nickel may occur. It is in this last step, the immersion gold. And if you have prepared the board well, meaning you clean the surface as, you know, ideally, and you have no residues of solder mass, you have no kindler residues on it, and then you catalyze it, and the catalyst is laid down uniformly on the pads, then you go into the electrolysis nickel. The electrolysis nickel will initiate uniformly, meaning the entire pad will initiate at the same time, and the electrolysis nickel will build up. And when it comes out of there, the nickel is smooth and uniform. Then you take this nickel into the gold bath. The chances are you're not going to have any nickel corrosion. If you mess up anywhere along the line, then the nickel deposit is going to be uneven. An uneven nickel deposit is much more susceptible to corrosion. So this is where it all comes in. And what the board shop has to do is ensure that all the steps are met correctly. And E-Nic is a very complex chemical process. It's the most complex chemical process in a board shop, because you have a cleaner that must do its job. First of all, the board coming in must be free of solder mask residues and free of tin lead residues. Then you clean it up in the soap cleaner, and then you rinse it well, and then you go ahead and micro-etch, roughen the surface, and smoothen out, get a new copper surface exposed. Then you rinse, and then you go into the catalyst, and the catalyst deposits a very thin layer of palladium. It's not anything. It's a very thin coating of palladium. The palladium initiates the nickel deposition. Then you come out of the catalyst, you rinse, and then you go into the nickel bath. And the nickel bath initiates where the palladium has deposited, where the catalyst is. So if you have a board that has copper pads and solder mask and everything else on there, the palladium will only catalyze the copper surface. So the nickel, when it's ready to deposit, it will only go where the palladium is, the palladium catalyst, by the way. Remember, I'm not talking about a layer of palladium. It's just a very thin coating of catalyst. So the nickel begins to initiate where the palladium is, so it deposits on the copper pads. It does not deposit on the laminate or the solder mask. When the nickel is done depositing and you stay there for as long as the desired thickness is, and then you come out, rinse, and go into the gold. And the gold, you stay there long enough to put a uniform layer of gold. The purpose of the immersion gold is only to protect the nickel surface until the nickel surface is soldered to. It is the soldering site. The soldering occurs with the nickel, not the gold. So what is the purpose of the immersion gold? The immersion gold is kind of a preservative, or it coats the nickel so the nickel does not oxidize, protects the nickel during storage and so on until assembly time. At assembly time, I put solder on this pad, which has nickel gold. The gold, thin layer of gold, will completely dissolve into the molten solder and disappear into the bulk of solder. And now the solder has a chance to create an intermetallic bond with the nickel. And assuming that the nickel is uniform and clean, the soldering is very smooth. One pass, you get the perfect soldering. If the nickel is compromised and it is corroded very heavily, the solder does not take well. And then you will have an occasional skip or failure here and there. There's no such thing as a panel would be completely black and it would go through assembly and it would completely not solder. There's no such thing. What happens is you have various degree of corrosion or blackness or corroded nickel, and these varying degrees of corrosion would create an occasional failure. Occasional failure is not acceptable. So that is what we're dealing with here.
And you presented at Surface Mount Technology Association's annual conference last fall. You co-authored a paper. In that paper, you looked at the elimination of nickel corrosion using something known as reduction-assisted immersion gold, which is a non-corrosive metal.
Yes.
What can you tell us about that?
Yeah. Amongst the solutions that suppliers are proposing is, you know, how do I give the manufacturing site a more robust process so that the probability of nickel corrosion is completely eliminated or reduced dramatically to the point where it does not become a problem? There's more than one approach that vendors are taking. One of the approaches is the one that the paper was published on. The approach was that I use a different kind of an emergent gold bath. The emergent gold reaction, as it stands, as an emergent gold reaction, is where nickel on the surface is going to dissolve and go into solution. When nickel metal goes into solution, it becomes a nickel ion. So instead of being nickel zero, it goes to nickel plus, the ion in solution. When it does that, it leaves behind electrons. These electrons take the gold ion, which is now in solution, the emerging gold bath, gold plus, and neutralizes it with this negative charge to become gold metal. So that's the exchange. The nickel is oxidized to the nickel ion, giving up electrons, and the gold is reduced by picking up this electron and becomes gold metal. So that is the exchange that occurs. This is a displacement reaction, or quote-unquote, an immersion reaction. In these reactions, things could go wrong. If the nickel is smooth and uniform and the gold is in spec, meaning the bath is according to the vendor's specification, has the right amount of gold, the right amount of pH, the right temperature, and so on, that exchange would go on very completely, smoothly, with no problems at all. Then, you know, if any of these things are out of spec, the nickel is not totally uniform, the gold bath is not perfect, then side reactions will occur. In these side reactions, the nickel would go into solution and gold would not come out of solution. This does not occur all over the world. It occurs in certain localities of irregularity. You know, certain areas that are not uniform, then you might see this, where the nickel is dissolving, but the gold is not coming out of solution. And that is what we refer to as nickel corrosion, or quote-unquote black pad, or initiation of black pad. So this is the reaction that is occurring, and if the conditions are not right, things could go wrong. Now, enter reduction-assisted emerging gold. A reduction-assisted emerging gold bath is also known as a mixed reaction bath. It initiates as a reduction bath or an immersion bath. So nickel dissolves and gold comes out to solution. And once this begins to happen, then the mechanism of electrolysis gold deposition, meaning without the need for the nickel to dissolve. No dissolving nickel, no immersion gold. So I get the initiation becomes immersion gold, and then as we go forward, the bath becomes an electrolysis bath, meaning it is reducing the gold on its own, chemically. It is not relying on electrons supplied by the dissolution of the nickel. And the dissolution of the nickel, it's not properly displaced by gold, is where corrosion occurs. So the mechanism of immersion chemistry is partially replaced by electrolysis deposition, which does not call on the nickel to dissolve. And the net result is the probability of corrosion is dramatically reduced.
So the 4552 Rev B doesn't specifically call out RAI gold as an alternative.
No. The specification does not determine what the market supplies or what the manufacturers would buy and how to set up the processes. This is not the job of the committee that puts out the specification. Specification says you have to meet the spec. And then how you do that is, you know, up to your vendor and up to your manufacturing site how to do this. So what we were saying in the paper is this would improve or open up the window of the position of gold and nickel dramatically so that you could conceivably completely eliminate nickel corrosion. So that was the paper. Now, is that the only way to eliminate nickel corrosion? The answer is no. I mean, ENIC has been running without reduction-assisted immersion gold forever. This is a new concept. So basically, what we have done as suppliers and our, but suppliers in general, they have made their processes more robust. And that means better cleaning in the front end, more uniform catalyzation, and depositing a nickel deposit that is more corrosion resistant, not too eager to dissolve without gold deposition. So this is a big part also, corrosion-resistant electrolyte nickel. And then the immersion gold, which would exchange more easily and not allow the nickel to corrode without gold deposition. That is the primary approach that vendors have taken forever, including Yamura, that you make a robust product. You know, the cleaning at the front end, catalyzation, the nickel deposit, and then the immersion gold. So this is what everybody is working with. Then we come in and we say, okay, here is another way to open your operating window. It's not the only way to eliminate corrosion, but it's one way to open the operating window. And that is also driven by another fact. When we were in the committee trying to put upper limits for immersion gold, you know, we spec says you put so much nickel and it's so many microns of nickel and so many micro inches of gold and so on. This all spilled out in the thickness part. When we came to the gold, the whole idea was minimize the dwell time of the board in the gold bath. And that in itself would minimize the probability of nickel corrosion. So we wanted the board shops to put down minimum amount of gold that would protect the nickel until it's soldered through. So there was no reason to put more gold. We didn't think that there is any good reason for somebody to say, I want 3 micro inches of gold. We're saying, you know, 1.2 to 2.2 is more than enough. Just get that deposited and get out of the gold bath. And then at that time, one of the OEMs was a member of the committee said, this is not going to fly, guys. I cannot live with, you know, 2.8 micro inches of gold as an upper limit. And we asked why, and the response was, the drawings that come to my board shop, most of the work I'm doing is medical, for the medical industry, and they require more than 3 micro inches of gold. On the drawing, it says more than 3 micro inches of gold, minimum 3. So they want 3 to 5. And he says, if you tell me the spec is saying 2.8, you know, or even 3 as an upper limit, I know that my deposit is going to fluctuate between certain levels, you know, like 3 minus 2, minus 0.2, plus 0.2, level 2.8 to 3.2 is my target. So that I hit 3, the chances are I'm going to violate the spec and then, you know, my board would be returned. So he said that is too restrictive for me. If I'm going to service the industry, that the designer says he wants more than 3 micro inches of gold, that's a minimum of 3. So then the committee gave in, and we wrote the spec saying 1.6 micro inches of gold up to 4 micro inches of gold. We did that tongue in cheek. We were not happy with that, but this guy said, you know, it's a big OEM. He said, you know, I'm making boards, and that's the requirement I have to meet. People want to take a goal. And for whatever reason, it's not our job as a committee to ask, why does the designer require a thicker gold? You know, it's none of our business. So then it became a problem with this attempt to put down thicker gold, create higher probability of corrosion. And we thought that it probably would. And so this reduction-assisted immersion gold would give a chance for that specific requirement of people requiring thicker gold. It would meet that requirement without creating corrosion because you're staying in the immersion gold too long.
Well, there's always some give and take in my experience in those committee meetings, you know, in order to reach that consensus that you referred to earlier. Your committee is meeting in a few weeks at IPC Apex Expo. Is there anything significant on the agenda for this meeting?
Yes, there is. When we finished Rev A as a committee, and we wrote down the specification, and then we went to ballot. You know, that's how the committee works, and you're very aware of that. Once the spec is put together, it goes to ballot by industry peers, and then people come back with comments and say, change this way, change that, I challenge this, I challenge that. And then the committee comes back together and addresses the concerns or the issues that were raised by the balloting group. And then we have to resolve all those issues. We were at that stage, and we had sent the document out for ballot, and it came back, and there was like maybe 20 or a little more than 20 issues that were raised. A lot of them were typos and stuff like that, which is easy editorial comments. That's easy to fix. Then we had a few technical comments that we had to discuss and convince the objector of what direction to take and so on. And we were going through this. Now, at that time, there was a change in the IPC. The liaison that we had on our committee forever since 2002 was changed. He retired. And now we have a new liaison, and this new liaison has a new boss. And they looked at what we were doing, and they said, uh-oh, this is all wrong. What is wrong? They said, your balloting group does not represent the industry, so this ballot is invalid. So we have to put together a different balloting group. And that became, you know, the issue. They wanted the balloting group to represent the industry, so many OEMs, so many manufacturers, so many suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. And so we went back to square one, put together a balloting group. And then we had all these issues that have been resolved with the original balloting group. So they put together a team so that we'd move a little bit faster to resolve all these new issues. And they want to prepare a document with those issues resolved, and then submit this document to this quote-unquote NC-compliant balloting group. So it's all, you know, in the logistics of how things were done. The ITC said this is all wrong. There is another thing also I believe that the ITC was concerned about is that the committee has, you know, like 100 members, and the committee works by having a conference call every other week, sometimes every week, one full hour conference call, and the people on the call make all the decisions. You know, they said, okay, we'll do this, we'll accept that, and then we document the minutes and they go around. So what this document contains is almost out there. It is not, people know what the RevB is going to say. They know that it's going to ask for this and ask for that, and these are the criteria, et cetera, et cetera. And the ITC, I'm guessing now that the ITC said, hey, what is going on here? How come all these people have different copies of this specification and it's floating around and people are actually trying to meet that spec when the spec wasn't issued? The revision hasn't been issued. The ITC had a problem with that also. It's where the spec is today. They thought that the group that was put together by Tom Newton, who was the liaison, IPC liaison, was not valid, and the procedure was not valid. There's too many documents floating around. That's not valid. So they wanted to take control back. So So they're looking again at answering all the issues that were raised. But then once those issues are rewritten, then they're going to put together a legitimate balloting group and then ballot and then resolve the issues if they come up again and then issue it. It's going to be forever, you know, but that's where we are. We were almost done in October, and then all of a sudden things changed and the ITC stepped in and said, hey, guys, you're doing this all wrong and we need to fix it. So that's where we are. And I think, you know, at APEX, this is all we're going to be talking about, is where is the standard today? What issues have been resolved? What else do we need to do? And how are we going to get to completion? And I think my impression is the ITC is going to tell the committee what they are allowed to do and what they are not allowed to do. I think the IPC was not happy that the information about how this spec is being developed is public. But, you know, as a chairman of the committee, I never thought that it's a secret how we're doing stuff. So, you know, the conference calls were always open to anybody who wants to participate and so on. So that is where we are.
Listeners who aren't involved in the standards writing activities are sometimes taken aback, I think, by just how much housekeeping there is, how many rules there are to follow in order to ensure that the standards as released represent true industry consensus. So thank you for all that insight. It's not an easy process. It may sometimes be straightforward, but it's never easy.
Yeah, we're under the impression that we've done our technical homework and we've written everything, and then it's just a matter of going through proper procedure. And that is where I think we failed. And as far as the IPC is concerned, we're not following proper procedure, so we're taking back and we're trying to do that.
Well, that brings us to a close to today's episode. I want to thank my guest, George Malad. And George, all our best for a successful 2020.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mike. It's a pleasure talking with you, and I appreciate all the work that you and your magazines and everything you do for the industry. It is phenomenal, and I wish you well. Anything I could do to support your efforts, I'd be very happy to do that. Thank you again.
Thanks, George. And this has been Mike Buteau for PCB Chat. Have a good day.